Random fun. Random fun. Do you still sing?
I do. Not professionally. Everybody always tries to get me to sing. I'm like, no.
Like just randomly? They're like,
yeah, they're like, you sing when you sing. It's like, no, you've got to catch me when no one's listening.
Well, maybe we can catch you in the musical episode of your new show, Pearson.
That's never going to happen.
The girl can dream. Yeah. From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Antonia Cerejido in for María Hinojosa. And today, a portrait of Gina Torres. According to Gina Torres, it has been easier for casting directors to imagine her in outer space than here on Earth, as an Afro-Latina woman. Her career started with dreams of Broadway, but soon she was in L.A., often getting cast as a strong woman in sci-fi shows.
They had two scouts sniffing, but I took them down.
Well, I didn't hear a single thing.
First rule of battle, little one, don't ever let them know where you are.
Her Cuban-American parents were very proud of her, but there was something about the roles that she got that they just didn't understand. Even though Gina Torres is Latina, she's rarely been given Latina roles. But now that she is the executive producer of her own show, Pearson, a spinoff of USA Network's show Suits, Gina has given herself the role her parents have dreamed of. A powerful Afro-Latina woman who is, in this case, a fixer for the mayor of Chicago.
Ms. Pearson played a critical role in putting this deal together, and she'll be an important part of my administration going forward. Ms. Pearson?
Thank you. By now, many of you are well aware of my past. It is a past that I own.
In the same way that Gina has had to maneuver around the politics of Hollywood, her character Jessica Pearson navigates the corrupt politics in Chicago. In this interview, Gina opens up about what it was like to grow up Cuban-American, why sci-fi has been a leader in representation, and her first time being the executive producer on the other side of the camera. Gina Torres, thank you for joining us on Latino USA.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking me to be here.
So you actually grew up in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in the Bronx.
Yep.
What was that like? What was your neighborhood like?
Oh, gosh. I have all those insipia memories growing up in the Bronx in New York. It was fun. It was the kind of New York that everybody sort of wrote those songs about in the 70s and the 60s. It was incredibly diverse and it was hot and it was, you know, the fire hydrants being open during the summer and my brother playing stickball and scullies in the streets and being home by the time the streetlights came on. It was all of that. And there was a romance about it because it was still a time when you knew who your neighbors were and they looked out for all the kids.
Your parents are from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And normally when you think of New York, you think of the Puerto Rican community or the Dominican community.
Sure.
Were there a lot of other Cubans around?
Yeah, the Cubans came first.
I have to get the facts right.
The Cubans were the first to come in, and then they were the first ones to leave. They went to West New York and other places in Jersey. But there were other Cubans, but there were also, you know, Jamaicans that lived on the first floor and the Puerto Ricans that lived on the third floor and the Polish immigrants that lived just, you know, three apartments down on the second floor. And there was everybody.
And did you feel like you did a lot of code switching at the time at home with your family speaking in Spanish and then at school?
Oh, gosh, I've never even heard that term, code switching. Wow, that's kind of cool. No, it was like you spoke to your parents in Spanish so that you could get what you needed and wanted and mostly food and clothes and attention. I have older siblings, so we spoke to each other in English primarily, but also in Spanish, and we switched off quite a bit inside the home. But once I left my neighborhood, then it was mostly English, yeah.
When you went to school, did you feel Latina at school?
I've always felt Latina. Let me put it that way. That was my identity. It is how I identify. It's how I move through the world. It's how my family raised me to be. I was Cuban, and that was it. There was no hyphenate. There was no Afro-Latina was a new concept that kind of sprung up a few years ago. And I was like, oh, I've been given a title. How lovely.
You went to Cuba for the first time when I believe you were 12.
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Beyond intense. it was the first time that my mother had been back in 22 years. So it was the first time she had seen her mother in 22 years.
Wow.
Both of my parents immigrated before the revolution. And so they left to find work and, you know, make a life for themselves here in the States. They had family that was here already. And they absolutely believed that they'd go home a couple of times a year and see their families. And the revolution happened and the door got shut right behind them. I grew up seeing my cousins in pictures and my grandparents and uncles in pictures with the rare phone call that was put through at like 2 o'clock in the morning. But when I got there, all of those things that my parents had instilled in me and what it meant to be Cuban and the language that they taught me all bubbled up and suddenly I made sense. Like I truly made sense for the first time in my life. I wasn't ethnically ambiguous anymore. I was Cuban. There was an actual place where now I was standing. I was standing in terra firma, you know, that these are my people. And my cousins who looked like me and sounded like my parents. It was incredible. And to see my mother see her mother and never leave her side. It was just one of the most emotional experiences of my life.
It must have been hard to leave then.
Yeah, and to think that was a week. They granted us a week's visa. And she never left her mother's side. Not at all. Like, she bathed her. She cooked for her. She sat with her. She held her hand. But I was just out running the streets with my cousins. Just couldn't be happier.
Did your mom and your grandmother then have more opportunities to be close to each other?
They were able to see each other two more times.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's a very Latina experience in general, is just having your family far away.
It sucked. I mean, there's really no other word for it. I grew up because of the political situation. It feels like there's just a huge chunk of me that was stunted. You know, we had the family that we created. Mm-hmm. We had the family that we chose. And that was fun and that was great because that's what immigrants do. They find each other and they make family where they can. And so that allows us to grow and evolve.
Early on, you discovered that you loved music.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some videos of you singing. You have a beautiful singing voice.
Thank you.
How could you trade heaven?
So what were your early dreams of being a performer?
To never leave New York and be a big Broadway star. That was in musical theater. That was really my biggest dream, even though I grew up watching movies and inserted myself into other realities, but not having anybody in my realm that was anywhere near show business, that just didn't really seem feasible.
Like TV and film seemed like too far away.
TV and film seemed way too far away. I didn't even know how I could even begin to get there. But I was growing up in New York City. Broadway was a train right away. That I could do.
So what led you to Los Angeles?
Work. Work led me to Los Angeles. There was a period of time where things started changing in New York City and getting your foothold in the theater became more and more difficult as an unknown, just because the stars at that time, like in the 80s, were actors that had really found their way into film from theater. And so they were going back to the theater because they loved the theater, which meant that if Broadway could lure a movie star, they were going to take less of a chance on an unknown.
So you were like, fine, I'll become a movie star.
I'll just have to become a movie star. I ended up getting a television pilot that paid for an entire year of living in New York. And I thought, oh, so I don't have to be a starving actor. Right. There's something more to this.
So you were auditioning for Latina roles.
When I could, when they let me in the room.
Okay, so, So yeah, what does that mean?
What it means is that I never looked like any casting agent's idea of what a Latina should look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly in the 80s, 70s, part of the 90s, primarily Latinas look like, you know, the European aesthetic of what a Latina is, which is much like
I know,
beautiful,
I was about to be like,
long, flowing, dark hair, olive skin, but not dark, just olive skin and big brown eyes. And I just didn't fit that profile.
Yeah. Did it make you angry?
It made me angry. It confused me. It made my parents sad because they didn't understand why their beautiful little Cubanita Americana wasn't being seen, you know, the way she should be seen. And my mother asked me one day, it's like, well, when are you going to play a nice little Latin character? So there was a level of heartbreak in that, to be disenfranchised so soon out of the gate.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line, and it's something that people are really just getting to now, that other Afro-Latinas have lived with, after Latinx have lived with their entire lives, which is, it's not that we don't think we're Black, but it's a different experience to be Afro-Latina than it is to be African-American. Mm-hmm. We have different points of reference. We have different cultural touchstones. And when the world perceives you as African-American, their expectation of you is very different than your own life experience.
You are, like, really big in the world of sci-fi.
Our platoon was stuck in a trench outside of New Casimir during the winter campaign.
Firefly is often called, like, one of the most important sci-fi shows ever.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about the genre?
I love the genre. The sci-fi genre, the fantasy genre, is what gave me my start. It's what actually gave me an in, because I didn't have to be, again, I'm ethnically ambiguous, right? Taller than the average bear. There was no real place for me when I was starting out. But I could be an assassin. I could be a pirate princess with a sword, wearing leather pants. There were no boundaries. There are no boundaries in the sci-fi world, in the action world, in the fantasy world. And so I found a place there. I found a home there.
Coming up on Latino USA, my conversation with Gina Torres continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
The world is complicated, but knowing the past can help us understand it so much better.
That's where we come in. I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei, and we're the hosts of Throughline, NPR's history podcast.
Every week, we'll dig into forgotten stories from the moments that shaped our world.
Throughline from NPR. Listen and subscribe now.
We're back, and we're speaking to Gina Torres about her new show, Pearson. Did you ever play an African-American role, or like a role that didn't have like ethnicity specified, and in your head you're like, this role is actually Afro-Latina?
Every day.
All the roles? Yeah,
every day.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. It's my little secret. That's my little secret, yes.
Well, the amazing thing is that now you're starring in this show.
I work for your boss.
Jason Epstein?
Your other boss? The man upstairs?
And every headline is about how it's like the first network television hour-long drama starring an Afro-Latina, which is an amazing celebration of your background.
Yes.
So you pitched the show?
I did.
That's so cool.
Right?
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, so what made you think of pitching this show?
Well, The 2016 election.
Wow.
It was good for many things. And most importantly, a way back into Jessica Pearson's life. Because I really had said goodbye to Jessica when I left Suits. But I became so obsessed with that election and the world of politics in general and all the people that inhabit it, and realized in my observations that many of these characters possess a lot of the same qualities that Jessica Pearson possessed. And how interesting might it be to actually put her right smack in the middle of the political world mm-hmm. with all of her skill set and her powers and see
and
what we
awesome
get.
And her awesome outfits.
And her awesome outfits. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it's an opportunity to see a far more realized version of this woman.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, the show touches on really deep topics. Gentrification,
yes.
Policing, corporate welfare.
You know, spending a fortune on a corporate playground and just when you have warehouse workers on food stamps, kind of seems like a backward strategy.
You'll have to excuse Ms. Castillo. She's our resident contrarian. That's okay. She's not
uh-huh.
Like, was that the idea? You were like,
homelessness, socioeconomic disparity, like, all of it. Absolutely. Immigration. Yes. Yeah. That was, we wanted to set ourselves apart from Suits in a very, very specific way and be our own animal. Because I spent so much time in that rarefied world that Suits is, that if I was going to now be able to co-create a world, I wanted it to encompass everybody.
Where did you get the inspiration for, like, the politics part of it? Because I think that's, like, super interesting, and it is very pressing, obviously,
right,
given
right.
what's happening.
Well, starting with somebody as dynamic who has a history to draw from, Jessica made it really easy to sort of infiltrate this world of politics. Many attorneys go into the world of politics, so that wasn't such a stretch. You have to know the law to some degree. You have to know how things work. You have to be savvy. And because she doesn't have her law license anymore, what else is she going to do?
So there's another character on the show who is your assistant,
mm-hmm.
who is a white-presenting Latina like myself.
Yes.
and I'm curious, like, how you thought of that role.
Oh, God. What happened to the post of your daughter? It's been a whole minute. What, you holding out on me?
Yoli, pues mira, mi princesa.
Were you part of casting that role?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was, yeah.
But you were behind everything.
Everything. That's what executive producer gets to do. The character of Yoli came to me. We knew we needed a millennial. We knew we needed her to be brilliant. And I knew I needed her to be Latina. And I remember talking to Dan Arkin, who's our head writer, and sort of saying, like, this is what I need, you know, and this is exactly how they need to meet.
Do you mind if I slip by? I'm running late.
Yeah, we're all going through security, lady.
Well, some of us are trying. I don't need you to valet my car. I just need to get to work.
The way they meet is basically ripped from the headlines of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many, 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 many times people think that I can't speak English because, I mean, Spanish. Maybe after this interview, they don't think I can speak English. But they don't believe, because again, I present African-American. So why would anybody think that I'm fluent in Spanish? And she makes that fatal mistake.
Feliz cumpleaños, su hija, Oscar. Disfrútela.
Who is that?
And we're off to the races.
And then you guys are in the elevator together.
Honest? I thought you'd respond to Latino.
There's a moment where, you know, Yoli's like, I thought you'd respond to, you know, this person because I'm Latina.
And mm-hmm. she asks the character, Jessica Pearson, if she's Latina.
Because I speak Spanish.
No, because you're Latina. You are Latina, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. And then there's like this ambiguous no response. Well, is the character Afro-Latina?
She is.
Okay.
She is, yes. What's really beautiful about this show is that our ethnicities, because it's a very diverse cast, they're not worn on our sleeves. We're not like, you know, charging up and down, waving our flags at every chance we get. We're humans first, and we are judging people on their merits, on their actions, on their character, not based on who they are, who we think they should be.
Given the conversation that's happening about Afro-Latinidad and there's a greater awareness about that identity, like, what do you feel you're leaving for future Afro-Latino generations? And what advice do you give to Afro-Latina actresses who are starting now?
I hope what I'm leaving is a wide open door and the wisdom as to who we are and who we've always been. We're not new. We've been here since time, alongside everybody else. Be yourself. Fully inhabit all of yourself, all that makes you who you are, because there's only one you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You can watch Gina Torres' new series, Pearson, on the USA Network. This episode was produced by Jonathan Cabral and Jeannie Montalvo. It was edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizacar, Maggie Freeling, Genesia Moca, and Sarah Quevedo. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our intern is Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Senia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our executive producer is Maria Hinojosa. I'm your host today, Antonia Cerejido. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Adios!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Mic check. Again. Here we go.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. On Saturday, August 3rd, a white man shot and killed at least 21 people at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas. The man had previously railed online about a, quote, Hispanic invasion of Texas. We traveled to El Paso and Ciudad Juarez to talk to the citizens of these border towns. That's next time on Latino USA.